From Brighton on the English South Coast, these are the voices of the Royal Pavilion and Museums with Dr. Sophie Frost.
Thanks for joining me again and welcome to Series 2 of Voices of the Royal Pavilion and Museums. I thought, what better way to kick off this series than by starting at the ground up? Over the next two episodes, I'll be talking to members of staff who work on the front line at Brighton's Museum Service, hearing about their hopes and dreams and what gets them out of bed in the morning. Launched in 2012, Royal Pavilion and Museums' Innovative Workforce Development Programme is a unique example of an on-the-job museum training scheme. The programme enables staff, predominantly those working in retail and visitor services roles, to branch out and try their hand in other departments for temporary periods, where they provide either much-needed support and alternative solutions, or devise new creative projects and activities. In this episode, I speak with Nick Kay, Workforce Development Officer at RPM, about the ethos behind the scheme, what has made the initiative so successful, and how in-house museum training isn't just a box-ticking exercise for assisting staff in climbing the museum career ladder, but about enabling a good quality of work life regardless of your position in the workforce. But before we get to Nick, we're going to hear very briefly from Sue Winkett, a member of the Visitor Services team, who introduces us to the diversity of the workforce at RPM.
The people that they take on, it's from such a broad background, and I think that's where they excel, because you are bringing in many different skills. Everybody complements each other. It's such a melting pot. It works really well. Yeah, I love that about the place. And you have people in there who are really, really highly skilled in their areas. It just might not be that museums and pavilion is their background, but I think they're all the better for it.
Yeah. From everyone I've interviewed so far and just a sense I have from RPM, there is a lot more openness to, like, yeah, everyone being on the same level, but also real value in everyone's perspective.
Yeah.
Would you say that was about right?
I think that's fair. I think in the early days there was some suspicion about it. Mm. And I think we could be quite a suspicious lot. but that was recognised by you know, senior management, by the leadership team. And this project was devised with that in mind. I think it was recognised that in some ways there's two services and not one, that there's a kind of a split within one team. There's a different ethos, there's a different culture, and there's a different outlook about the whole organisation. Mm-hmm. A different feeling of belonging, of sharing, with, you know, responsibility. And to tackle that, it was always one of the core aims to build a one-team mentality within the organisation. That's listed as one of our objectives. And I think it overcame that kind of suspicion, that kind of that doubt. And you hear lots of things. You hear people say, oh, there's no point involving because nothing will come of it. There won't be any development. There won't be any jobs at the end of it, which I think missed a point largely. But I think those days are behind us now. I think there's a considerable amount of staff buying. And it's not just the frontline staff that's been overcome and are on board with it and, you know, champion it. It's throughout the whole organisation, because I think we found reluctance, not just from frontline, but from certain other parts of the service. They struggle too with their own problems, their own lack of resources, lack of time. And I think there was a feeling that they didn't want to let anyone down as well. And that's something we heard quite frequently, right? And we still hear today that they don't want to have people to be disappointed. But I think that completely misses a point. It's by creating the opportunity and by meeting the strategic needs of the organisation. When I'm faced with a question, someone says, well, you know, the person's going to have to, they may work with me, but they're going to have to go back to their team. Will they be disappointed at the end of it? And they say, yeah, they probably really will, but they've had that opportunity, that experience now, and they never look back. And they've had the benefit of having that extra staff member there. And it builds relationships, you know, really positive working relationships, you know, and friendships we've seen that are hugely beneficial for the organisation and what we deliver. We've had exhibitions and displays because of that associations, those friendships that people built up by working in different teams. That kind of cross-pollination of ideas and enthusiasm between teams. And another thing I hear all the time is someone say that, you know, I don't have the time to do this at the moment, to take on a placement, to work with them. I've got so much. And you know, it's something I'm conscientious of, is not to put an extra burden on them and say, oh, you know, you have to do this, you're obliged to do it, or to, you know, or to use their better natures to have them agree to something they haven't really got the capacity for. So I always steer clear with that. But I do try to make the argument and say, well, look, you know, I don't want it to be another burden upon you. The perfect arrangement is that the person that works with you, that from the front line, doesn't increase your burden, they take some of it away. They take some of your workload away. They contribute in a really meaningful way. It doesn't always have to be geared towards an exhibition or display. It works wonderfully when it does. But sometimes just to have those extra staff members there working on the MIMSI database, to work on projects, to work on shadowing, to make a contribution across the whole service. And there's so many numerous examples. Right now we have two workforces working with our retail and stock department, and they're learning, you know, how to do those things, how to order stock, what should they be buying, what sells well, how do you put it on display that works. And they're doing it to a team that are incredibly depleted and that really, you know, appreciative of having those two extra people there. Those frontline staff, they're learning those, you know, really valuable skills for the first time.
Is it just frontline staff that benefit from workforce development, as in are they the ones that generally do the placements, or are there other people in other departments that do placements? And does it work both ways, basically, is what I'm asking?
No, so it's purely for frontline staff.
Okay.
And there's a couple of reasons for that, but it actually, that's quite broad. It's not just for room stewards or for sort of gallery explainers. It includes the bookings office, it includes our ticket sales, retail team and cashiers. It includes our housekeeping team, security team, and actually learning assistants as well. So it's fairly broad, and it's quite a lot of the workforce.
What are some of your favourite stories of like people's career trajectory as a result?
Well, we know there's someone working at a curator today that worked from our frontline service, and her first, you know, really valuable experience. It was practical. So you could add it to a CV, and she did, and add it to her, you know, job interviews. And it was the doorway, really, for a career in museums. She's not the only one, there's been so many. We have two of our collections assistants now that work on the other sites, both started from workforce development, both desperate to work in that area of museums. There was no pathway towards that without workforce development. It enabled them to really sort of fulfill their ambitions in the museum service. We have now the bite-sized talks in Brighton Museum, talks about our collections every week. It's a permanent part of our programming in the Brighton Museum. It started because of workforce development with someone that now works with programming who started from the frontline role. So again and again, there's so many. I struggle to remember them all. Right now, we have one who's working with our museum mentors group, part of our outreach program to work with the community, who's looking towards perhaps leaving our service, but he's still with us at the moment, combining it with his training, but looking towards a career to work in adult social care. His future quite possibly lies away from the museum service, but without workforce development, he wouldn't have pursued that avenue at all. So it's
great
opportunity. It is.
That's really inspiring.
Yeah, it really works here. And it works at so many different levels. You know, for some people, it's not about furthering their career. When we say opportunity, that's quite broad.
Yeah.
And I know someone that's, you know, their opportunity, they're not looking to move on. They're perhaps in the last few years of their career working, but for the first time, they were given the chance to work on areas of our collections that they've never have before. And a valuable member of our team, our frontline service team, as a room steward for many, many years. But it gave them the chance to create tours of our underground tunnel system for the public. They devised the text and the delivery for those talks. And it was an area of the building they'd had a passion to open up to the public for years and years, and workforce development fulfilled that ambition. So it wasn't about career possibilities for him, it was really about maximising the enjoyment of their job, and you know, and it brought a huge benefit to them. We now have, all these years later, we still hold those tunnel tours. They're still very popular, they're still sold out, and it started because of workforce development.
There's something so lovely in that as well, that it's not just about careers, it's about staff's sort of well-being on the job and their contentment.
Absolutely.
And by sort of continually opening up new opportunities to be curious and develop experience, I guess. So That's amazing.
Yeah.
A programme like this, we don't come across them very much in the museum sector. Like, you don't see such established workforce development. What are the conditions in a museum to have that need to be in place in order to have a workforce development programme of the kind of strength and tenacity of the one that's now at RPM?
Yeah. It started as a great idea between two members of staff, between the director, Janita, and the head of learning and development, Helen. And it started as a series of talks between them. It's part of our funding agreement with the Arts Council.
Okay.
It meets our strategic aims in terms of that funding. So it's embedded within our organisation, certainly. And it was loose in those early years. It started off as a wonderful idea, but things can take a while before they really take shape. And I think it's only when they're implemented. And I think it's fair to say in the early days, there were successes. Absolutely there were. Some really great ones, like the Pavilion Tales, which is a series of public talks, and the bite-sized talks. But on the whole, I think it was still kind of, people were feeling out. You know, there's not that many uptakers from the frontline service. It took a few trailblazers, if you like, and a few people to champion it. And it took time, I think, for some of the suspicion to fall away.
Mm.
And for people to really sort of think, fully open up to the advantages that can come with it for them and for the organisation. And from the other side, for those people that host placements, the advantages they have through letting someone new to come into their team with loads of ideas, loads of enthusiasm, loads of energy. I think we're in a much better place now where everyone is sold on how, you know, positive it is, how agreeable it is. And certainly we've had people who've never hosted a workforce development come to me and say, look, I've got this wonderful idea. It'd be brilliant if we could have a workforce development to help with it. We've got so many great ideas. We can't always fulfill everything we'd like to. We have still a limited budget and we have other restrictions upon the workplace, you know, because of stresses and lack of resources. It's about navigating a pathway, really, I think, and finding out what works. And always being careful that, you know, this doesn't become a detriment in any way. That there's always that positive strategic outcome. You know, there's a clear aim of what we're trying to achieve. And that can be for the organisation and the individual. I always start saying, okay, what are the aims in terms of their skill sets? What learning outcomes are we hoping for? And running through them and putting those in the call out sheet. So this is what we're looking to achieve by the end of this talk for you, on a very professional footing.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes in the early days, perhaps it wasn't that wasn't so clear. You know, it wasn't so precise, the workforce development. Some people really, you know, opened up to it in a positive way and said, I'm happy to have someone work for me, and they shadowed. But maybe on reflection, we look back and there wasn't those learning outcomes that we really wanted. You know, it was just there for its own sake. And it was really nice as people involve someone, but I don't think maybe there was that lasting gain for the organisation or for the individual that was taking part. And it took some time, and I think we got there now. I think the first time, whenever a proposal was mentioned, we all discuss is what are we trying to achieve for it? What's the outcome for the person? Mm-hmm. Is there a career pathway for this? If there's not, if it's a project, how do we best deliver that? And we always are, that's our sort of main focus now. And I think that's where it shifted, I suppose. It's just gone up a gear, I think.
Yeah.
We've had a number of, organisational aims. And I've talked to my manager in learning and development about adding a new one to it. And it's one, I think, that was always part of our Arts Council funding agreement, one of the aims for that, but not the one we included as an objective for the RPM. And that was diversity. And my perspective was that we weren't singing our praises enough, that we were a whole area was missed out of what we were bringing to the organisation, what workforce development was. And it was kind of, and my eyes were opened up to this a bit more when we had some recent meetings with the Arts Council and the way that they saw it, fulfilling their objectives. Okay, there's several ways, you know, there's always been a diversity angle to workforce development. That's part of our commitment to the Arts Council we deliver. And open up an opportunities for frontline staff. Inherently, that's opening up, you know, more chance, it's more diverse. That's great. it's the second phase of that I think we missed out on. And to me, it's like, okay, we've done that, but how does then those people that are taking part in the project, how do they improve the diversity of the whole organisation? And now look upon it as a mechanism that how actually we bring about fundamental change in what we deliver as a service to the public. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you an example. One thing that's talked about so often is how do we reflect our community, and it's so important. Yeah. And you know, we can sometimes forget the hair all around us right now. Our community is working for us in the museums. So everywhere you go, when you buy something in the shop or you get served in the cafe, you're meeting Brighton and Hove community right here and now. So if we're looking for ideas, yeah, you know, we can do it through outreach programs, we can do it from consultation with the communities, but we can also involve our staff in the decisions that we make, and we can have their input in the projects that we deliver. I was presented with an opportunity several years ago because of the workforce development program, and it gave me a chance to step out of my role. It began with conservation. It's still something I do today. I have two jobs there at the moment, and you know, that started the ball rolling. From that, a role became available to help support the project permanently, and I applied for that role, which, you know, that wouldn't have come about without that previous involvement. And that's the role that I'm in today. And my work there is shared between those two jobs. And yeah, I've only got really good things to say about it. It's a wonderful project. I have to. I work in it. It wasn't the earliest days of the project, but I think it was still fairly early. It's before they had, well, my job is an officer that helped support it. And things were slightly looser, I think, at that time. Mm-hmm. So what started out as a temporary arrangement, so it got extended for months and months, I think the best part of a year. So it became a long placement. And and that highlights an important part of actually the benefits of workforce development to an organisation, because what it really does, it highlighted where there's a need in the service, where there's a shortfall in staff. You know, we needed preventative conservation assistants, and we didn't have them, and we were going through a period of time where recruitment was difficult in the local authority. It was problematic recruitment. There was a freeze in employment which affected us. But there were still all these roles that needed carried out, all these jobs. And one method that we had of filling that vacancy and having that work being carried out was through using a resource, using a frontline resource. Using me as an example, I left my role to go and help that preventative conservation team. The budget from the workforce donor would pay for the backfill of my role from another member of staff. So, you know, it gave work to someone else, and it enabled me sort of to help that team. And we got work done because of it. Now, if it had been a short role, that would have been of limited use, really, to the conservation team. What they needed, someone was there for a very long time, and I was there for almost a year. So it really highlighted that the sort of desperate need the organisation had to have that project. So there's different sides to it. It's very easy to look at workforce and say, oh, you know, this is a scheme to help support frontline staff, to give them an opportunity, to make them feel more involved, to promote a one-team mentality, and certainly it is that. But it's also a strategic aim for the organisation.
Hmm. I like the way it's a two-way thing as well. So it enhances, you know, it gives a lot of opportunities to staff to upskill, but then it also really works to the advantage of, like, I don't know, the strategy of the organisation in terms of having, like you said, short-term cover that they really need. So, quickly, the freeze in employment, at what time was that? Was that around the financial crisis?
It was, and it was tied to, I think, funding shortfalls in local authorities.
Okay.
So it wasn't really directly a problem for our service, but, you know, it was. We're part of Brighton & Hove City Council, part of the local authority.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever impacted the service impacted us at the Royal Pavilion and museums. But also it's beyond that, because there's plenty of times, even when there isn't that lack of resource or that shortfall in funding, where it's just not the right option to recruit for a permanent post. And this allows, it's not just a short-term fix, it's about development of the whole service as well as the individual. So we again, it's two ways of looking at it. We focus again on the individual staff development and sometimes that team development of the frontline service, bringing them into the wider organisation. But it's development of skills within the service. And I'll give you an example. Lots of that, but mine was conservation. So those skills haven't gone. Whatever you learn, you're ready to be called upon again to go and step in if there's another shortfall, if there's something needed. And that's not just one team, that's across the whole service. So Mimsy is the classic one I quote all the time. It's a cataloguing system, it's a database system for museum collections. And it takes a long, long time to train someone up to use it. But we've had several members of staff through workforce development that have got experience with collections team using that system. And you know, I won't say any of them are experts, but it's just a really valuable part of the project to have upskill to that extent across the team, to have people that are au fait with the system, that can step in, can volunteer, as many of our workforce development placements have. When it's come to an end, they've gone back into those teams and volunteered their time to gain valuable experience, but because I think they enjoy working in that environment, and it's just really, it helps out. There's always going to be a shortfall in resources in museum services, and it's up to us to find creative ways really of filling that shortfall, that skills gap within the organisation.
There's so much negative press about how hard it is to be a young person coming out of university and going into the museum service. Almost, you know, an abundance of negativity about it, actually. And maybe there's a bit of a lack of pragmatism. And here you've got an amazing programme which actually says, yeah, okay, elements of it are a bit unstable, but then you get access to something like this.
Absolutely. This was always one of my key reasons for becoming involved is I think it's true that we're in a sector that's shrinking. Mm. At the same time, I think the willingness of people to become involved is increasing. There's less opportunity, but more people applying. There is other means of people entering museum services. You know, people volunteer, internships. There's quite a few ways in. I think, and they all, you know, they all have their place. But I think you need to kind of offset them sometimes with a completely different kind of workforce project. And this is what we do. And I think you're absolutely right that not everyone can afford to work for free.
Mm.
You know, it's an important part of, you know, museums, but it's problematic at the same time. You know, I think accusations, it could be elitist.
Mm.
There's an argument for that. I think also there's an argument to say it's exploitative as well, in certain cases.
Yeah.
I certainly saw, having worked there for a long time, the makeup of that finance service change, out of all recognition. It was mainly staffed, I think I might say in this steward, that role was staffed with ex-servicemen, ex-police officers, people close to that retirement age, looking for a quieter job, quieter life.
Yeah.
Within a few years, completely different. And we have to be honest. We have to say that the job market is, you know, people aren't always in a position to say that they work for free. That would be their entrance into museum service. So they need to work, but they want to gain that experience too. We see applicants all the time in a variety of jobs, frontline roles. Having done that, you need to utilise it. You need to give them the opportunity, not waste what they can bring. And that's what workforce development does. So most of the people that apply for roles now are postgraduates. They come with expectations. I think it's a shame that there isn't more projects like this in other museums, in other historical buildings. I think you'd have better morale as well if everyone did that. Start in one area, to pick up all that skills, all that perspective, and then move on and take it with you.
What would be your sort of hopes and dreams for workforce development? Where could it go next? What's the bit of it that still gets you out of bed in the morning?
To a certain extent, it's embedded in the organisation in the way that it's tied to that Arts Council funding. But it's always been an aim for us to embed it more seriously within the organisation, mm-hmm. beyond that, and say that, you know, these are the permanent outcomes we've managed to achieve. One thing that was discussed is perhaps an alternative job role. Once we're aware that our frontline team are more flexible, there's more skill sharing and job sharing between them. The next step is to say, well, you know, why is it so sort of fragmented, and why is it so, why are so many positions so sort of closed off? And with their own titles and their own responsibilities, when, you know, the idea is kind of break down those barriers, really. So one idea was to merge all the job titles, all those frontline job titles, and include some other areas they're not historically responsible for or involved in. Conservation is not a very obvious one. But, you know, there's many more I think we could look at and say, well, you know, that could be an interesting part of a entrance level jobs into museums, and say, well, why can't that be the frontline role? Why do we have to call them stewards, or, you know, call them cashiers, when, you know, there's a great deal of movement between people in those jobs. They're trying to share that those roles and responsibilities anyway. Now we have people to encourage them to deliver more talks. We have Pavilion Tales, where they go away and do their own research, and then they come delivered out to the public, and every Thursday at lunchtime. The notion was it'd be a bite-sized talk, or a small pop-up talk, and in the end it emerged into this big piece of research and delivering to sort of 20, 30 or 40 people. Looking at that and other areas, so it's not really the role that they applied for. It's not the role that we advertise, and it's not the one historically we've had at the Royal Pavilion. So maybe we could revisit it and create a job title that included all these aspects and give it a name. The one I think that was suggested at the time was museum assistant, because it's vague enough that you can incorporate all these other aspects to their role, what people are actually doing, and it could include workforce development too. I think it's been hard to get off the ground. I think there's a number of reasons for that. I think there's other priorities, of course, and there's a certain amount of inflexibility that comes with being in a local authority. But I think we've taken the first few steps with that recently, and there's a job that was ideal. It's very temporary. It was aimed around the museum galleries, which close through long stretches of the year. And so it was very isolated to just a couple of rooms, and they had no work outside those rooms, and when there was no exhibitions, they didn't work at all. And I thought, well, you know, perhaps this is ideal is to really reintroduce into the rest of the service. And so we've done that, and those jobs now under that new title. So perhaps we've taken the first few steps into saying, you know, that this we're creating a whole new frontline role of shared jobs, of shared responsibility, with loads of different jobs within it, really, that they can move around. That would be a more attractive proposition to the people that apply for these roles anyway, to advertise. And I think it could be a more honest advertisement for a job. I think it sets a very kind of clear purpose straight away of what someone's trying to achieve if you apply for a job like that. And I think it'd be more attractive to people. And I think also it'd be more valuable for them if they only stay a short time to take on to another employer, to say that I worked within this role, I had all this different experiences, this very flexible post, I gathered loads of experience in a museum service in a historical building.
So what's the main block at the moment to introducing that job role? Presumably there's probably quite a few, aren't there?
Things just move very slowly, I think. We are actually, you know, we're moving to trust. We're perhaps moving away from Brighton Hove City Council as the main as a controller, I was going to say, but I suppose the person responsible, the organisation responsible for RPM, and looking towards a different model, a trust who deliver our service in future. And perhaps with that will come a certain amount of flexibility that we haven't had before, and we can more easily make these changes. Whether it's someone that's just started or someone that's been there a long time, you know, sometimes decades, it doesn't really matter. What it gives them is kind of hope, an opportunity, another avenue, another work experience, and that can be so transformative. And again, I go back and say it doesn't necessarily mean that they're looking for different employment or to advance within that organisation. I think it's about just quality of work and life. You know, you can't put a price on that. I think it's so important. It's what they then take back to their teams when they can go back. They're so much more positive, so much more enthused. You know, really, people bursting with ideas. So many people, having finished one workforce development placement, want to instantly take part in another one, you know, or ready to apply. I've seen the confidence of people just transformed by being part of the project. delivering talks in public space for the first time, or going to work in doing a job they never thought they were capable of, or anyone would offer to them, and just being, you know, utterly changed by that, you know, in the workplace. I think that's sort of it's what strikes me about it, and it's why I applied for this post. It's really gratifying to see.
Mm. That's a really lovely point to end on, probably, I think. Thanks,
Thank
Nick.
You.
I'm going to press stop now. My thanks go to Nick for taking the time to speak so passionately and eloquently about this innovative training scheme at RPM. Surely an inspiring example for many museum services out there. It was Nick's use of the word transformative that got me most in that interview. The fact that the opportunity for staff to try something new was both a personal and professional experience, from which has emerged new friendships, a new sense of contentment and well-being, whilst nurturing a spirit of lifelong learning across the organisation. RPM's workforce development programme demonstrates the breadth of what on-the-job training can mean in a museum setting, the potential of which goes far beyond just having new skills and experiences to put on your CV. Throughout this series, the positive impact of the workforce development scheme at RPM will reverberate across the voices of museum staff. This is notably the case in the next episode, where I'll be talking to some of the walking encyclopedias who make up those working on the front line, about how the museum service has changed the way that they see the world. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, hit like and subscribe, and please leave us a very nice 5-star review. Find out more about the Royal Pavilion Museums at brightonmuseums.org.uk and more about this project at onebyone.uk. On Twitter, I'm Soph_Frosty and RPM is Brighton Museums. I really hope you can join me next time. Till soon, goodbye.
The voices of the Royal Pavilion and Museums are supported by the One by One Research Project, the School of Museum Studies at the University of Leicester, The Keep, Arts Council England, and produced by Lo-Fi Arts. Lo-Fi.